Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I'm your host, Robert Washburn, and you're listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM.
In Cobourg and Port Hope, 550 households will seek help from the Northumberland Fair Share Food Bank on any given week. These people come from a wide range of backgrounds: unemployed professionals, seniors living on a fixed income, young families, working poor, and youth. For some, it takes courage to overcome the barriers of asking for help. For others, there is little choice, as they are unable to find enough work to cover the rising costs of food, rent, gas, and other necessities. Helen Donovan, the CEO of the food bank, will tell you many heartbreaking stories of people who come every week to get a few days of food as they struggle. Here is that interview.
I'm so pleased to have with me today Helen Donovan, the CEO of the Fair Share Food Bank. Welcome to Consider This.
Thank you very much, Robert. Happy to be with you.
The inflation rate for Canada is at 7.7%. The cost of groceries, gas, and rent are at record highs. Are you seeing an increase in the number of people who are coming to the food bank?
We certainly are. In the first 6 months of this year, our numbers have increased almost 50% in terms of the numbers of people coming. And our food costs have increased in the range of 27 to 30%. So we are feeding more people more often at a higher price. So the food bank is definitely being challenged to maintain the levels of nutrition and the number of days that we try and provide for since the beginning of the year.
Do you know how many people exactly you're serving on a regular basis on average?
On average, in the two communities, we serve about 550 households. And that translates to about 1,370 people. And of those people, they come approximately five times in that quarter that I'm quoting. So in the last quarter, Q2, for example, resulting in almost 7,000 mouths fed, if you like, or fed that many times. In the second quarter.
For people who don't understand Q2, can you just explain what time period that is, please?
Yes, I'm sorry. That would be April, May, and June. In March, we had the highest number that we've ever been able to help. And that was that goes back from the to the beginning of time, if you like. There were 2,600 visits in March of this year.
So I'm clear. You're saying that this past March, you set a record for the food
bank
in the number of people that you served.
Yes, we did.
That's just incredible. The numbers that you quoted for the April, May, June period, how do they compare to, say, a year ago? Because we were in the pandemic, and I know there were additional pressures in the pandemic that came to the food bank as well.
Well, I think in order to get a proper context, you have to go back to pre-pandemic. This represents about I'm going to say 30% increase over the 2019. In 2020 and 2021, our numbers actually dropped for a variety of reasons. The CERB monies helped families maintain their own ability to purchase their foods and their necessities. And it also, because of the threat of exposure amongst other people, our numbers went down in that period of time. We weren't surprised by that. It was a provincial trend, quite frankly. Everyone in the province experienced the same thing. And that partly resulted then in that surge in 2022, when those dollars no longer existed and that savings account had been used up and resources people would have in addition to the other costs of living, the gas prices especially, high costs of rent. And so it became a bit of a perfect storm in early 2022 for a swell of people requiring our assistance.
Who are the people that are coming to you? And in particular, are there new people? You said that there's been this increase in the people that you feed. Who are these people that are coming to you? Could you describe them as a demographic so that we get a picture in our minds of how the situation is maybe changed, or are they the same kinds of people? Can you help us understand who are the people that are coming to you?
The people are, I would say, a cross-section of society. I have had people that I've chatted with who have held professional roles and have perhaps been impacted by mental health. People who have held jobs with GM and organizations like that, whose family broke up, divorce, additional costs. I had one gentleman one day come in, and his daughter and grandson were ahead of us, and we use a shopping cart model, and I was walking with him, and he looked at me and he said, you know, I lost my job last April and I've been able to get by until now. And the now was in October. But he said, I wouldn't ordinarily come here, but I come to help out my daughter. And his eyes were teary and whatnot. And then the little fellow who was ahead of him in his mom's arms turned around and he waved with a great big smile and he said, hi, Poppy. And then my man had this great big smile as well. And it was like, you know what? I wouldn't ordinarily come here for me. My pride suggests it's, you know, not the right thing to do, but I'll do anything for my grandson. So there's a wide variety. There's the working poor, who have minimum wage jobs at part-time levels, and stretching that dollar is impossible to do without the support of a food bank.
In terms of the increase, though, are you seeing a particular demographic in terms of age or background that is being hardest hit by these inflationary trends, and therefore they're having to turn to a food bank to get support?
I would say the increase right now is largely the working poor. Those are the people who, to get to work, it costs them more to fill their tank of gas, that have had to perhaps endure some cutbacks at work, haven't seen increases in their salaries in a while. Young people who are perhaps hampered in some way in their ability to hold down a job. They have begun to come. It's sad to see so many young people depend on us. We're happy to be there, of course, but you just wish that you could inject an element of optimism and hope. And it's interesting that you think people, you know, sort of take advantage sometimes. That can sometimes be the perception, but such is not the case. It's really heartwarming to see those that come be very aware of not taking more than they should take. Someone else might need it. But the demographics, I guess more to your point, is right across the board. We've had some Syrian families come, that changes our need, for example, to some specialty foods, which we try to provide for them to support their culture.
What about seniors?
Seniors, absolutely. We don't see the senior increase. We know that it's there. And this, we were about to launch a program called SOS, which was support our seniors, to basically connect with them. The seniors have a mindset of a stigma attached and are not coming and should be coming. And we need to get that message out to the senior community that we welcome them and we're happy to help, and that they should look after their health and look after themselves, and even from the social perspective of having interaction with others. So we had to put the SOS program on the back shelf for a little bit of time. We need more funding to support that, because our numbers went up so much, we couldn't take on a new program, if you like. So if we get funding and more importantly, people to volunteer to help us, we can certainly relaunch. We have the program all ready to go, but we do need support from the community to do that.
Let's talk about the money for a moment. Financially, how would you say you're doing?
I would say we should never take our eye off the ball, because there will always be a need. And at times there'll be an unplanned need. So we can't get complacent. We have been fiscally responsible, and you probably have noticed that from our audit. And we did get grants through the COVID period of time from governments. And that enabled us to, if you like, get our internal structures and safety requirements and so on in place. But we need every dollar that we can get, quite frankly, and we will continue to need that. And we'll continue to be able to introduce new programs so that the whole idea of a food bank is not an emergency services anymore. It has become a necessity for many families to get them through from one end of the month to the other. I can't stress that enough. I think it's a community responsibility, I guess. And there's anywhere from 80 to 100 volunteers, and you can imagine the dollar value of those hours from volunteers. There's the community donations, but it's not a we they. It's a community funded, community supported responsibility, that the young people in our area are well fed, that they have an opportunity to know that they can have full buddies when they go to school, and the seniors in our community should not be missing out on having a fresh orange or a fresh piece of fruit, because it's just beyond their pension money to be able to purchase. I'm sorry, I get a little bit, a little bit passionate about it at this point in time, because we are such a wealthy country. And when you stand next to someone in the supermarket who shakes their head and says, I love oranges, but I just can't afford to buy them anymore. And you know that orange is nutritious and it should be on that person's plate. That's when I get a little upset by the fact that some people are suffering from lack of nutritious food.
No need to apologize. I'd like to go back though to the finances. What is your annual budget?
Our operating budget is about $475,000 a year.
In your audited statement, though, you look to have a total of over $1 million. Did I read that incorrectly?
You didn't. Through the CERB or not, pardon me, not served, through the COVID time, we were recipients of grants, government grants, and some business funding that increased our bottom line for that period of time. It gives us a contingency fund of about $400,000 right now, which we feel is appropriate. We feel that to have a 1 to 2 year secure fund in the bank for any board that comes along, for any necessity that comes along, for any emergency that comes along, is a wise way to manage the business. But we try to have our operating budget supported by our donations on an annual basis, and our savings in the bank, if you like, is there for the eventuality that something unforeseen should happen. And we all know that those sorts of things do happen. It's a first for us to be able, it's only in the last couple of years where that additional funding has been put away and safely guarded. The first year that I was involved, which was 3 years ago, we had an operating budget projection of a minus $35,000. So this little bit of extra, which came through COVID, has been a bit of a godsend in order for us to feel secure in maintaining our services over the long term, and not just a hand-to-mouth kind of situation.
I saw, going over the numbers, a loss in fundraising during the pandemic, almost of half over a year period. Can you talk a bit about what happened there and what you're doing now to remedy that?
Well, the fundraising typically involved events which brought people together, which wasn't possible during COVID for a variety of reasons. So we would have a golf tournament, for example, or events where people came together and shared their donations and had a party of some sort, celebration of some sort. So that was a large part of how we raised our funds initially. And none of that was possible during COVID. We will be fundraising this fall. We had a change of board just 2 weeks ago. And we deliberately, if you like, waited until we could plan. This is our 35th anniversary. So we will be doing a fundraising program this fall, to be launched hopefully by the end of September. And that hopefully will augment what we normally would have raised in fundraising dollars. And we just need to put our team together, and anyone who's in the listening audience who likes to fundraise, we're more than happy to take your expertise and your enthusiasm and add it to the team. It's a skill set that is pretty unique, but very valued in the charity business.
I understand earlier you mentioned that you have quite a large staff. How are you finding it for getting volunteers to staff the operation? How many do you need and how many do you have?
On a regular basis, we have between 80 and 100 volunteers. There's an incredible amount of work which the ordinary person is not going to be aware of that takes oodles of volunteer hours. And we are a total volunteer organization at this point in time, although we may be hiring someone to offset some of the responsibilities. But I would like to have a what I would call a bullpen of volunteers, so that our regulars have a bit of an opportunity to have a reprieve when they go on vacation, that there's someone able to step in. Additional volunteers would also mean that we could do more. There's a lot of opportunity, for example, for people to not even come into the operation. They can do volunteer work from home. They can call our donors and thank them, or they can write notes, or they can contact businesses and they can establish relationships and network throughout the community and get the good news out there as to what we're doing and what we can do to increase our reach. So COVID really put a damper on the networking opportunities. We had volunteers come in and manage the program for 2 years without a break. And most of us are seniors. And so realistically, if we had a wish list, we'd love some younger, able-bodied people who can help move a box more easily than some of us with back issues. That's probably the biggest search, if this podcast reached anyone, is people who have the strength and the ability to help out with some of the physical lifting and physical activities that go along with being active in a food bank.
What's next for the food bank?
Well, I wish we could close down, but that's not going to happen. We will continue to get better at what we do in reaching out to the people in the community that need us. An example of that was last August, we began a delivery program, recognizing that some people are just not able to get to the food bank. They rely on someone else for transportation, or their moms or dads at home with young children. They can't get there. So we began a program primarily in Cobourg, which delivers food. People can call in, and if you'd like, we tell them what we have and they tell us what they want. And then a group of volunteers deliver it on a once a week basis. So that was an expansion to our services. We also, as I said, feel that we can provide life skills, that we can partner, and this was our original plan for pre-COVID, partner with other professionals in the community, whereby perhaps someone from legal aid is on site once in a while, maybe a veterinarian is on site once in a while, someone who has extra skills of some sort can share those skills. Food is the basic necessity that we all have. So when we bring people together to get food, we can capitalize on that. And that's our plan in both locations. Unfortunately, that plan would have been launched 2 years ago, and it'll have to be redesigned now because life has changed. But that's where we hope to go, to make it a more all-inclusive experience for the person who comes.
Helen Donovan, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
That was Helen Donovan, CEO of the Northumberland Fair Share Food Bank. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.